The talks this week, both in Frenchtown and today, are on the Vajragota Sutta. And last night's talk, I read and we all commented on the entire sutta. So that talk is available. I'm only going to refer to the end sequence of this conversation that Buddha's having with Vajra. So just to place a little more emphasis on something they didn't quite get to last night, although I did talk about it. And that's the idea of rebirth, which is really underlying all these questions. So the beginning part of the sutta is this contemporary of the Buddha. His name is Vajragota. He comes in and out of the Buddha's life, peppering the Buddha with these questions that are irrelevant to the Dhamma, but they're really the great questions that mankind has been pondering and kind of insisting that there be answers to. And there are no answers in relation to the Dhamma, and these all have to do with what happens to the soul after death, what happens to an awakened human being, does a physical body possess a soul, does a soul possess a body, are the soul and the body separate, are the soul and the body the same, are the soul and the body concurrently separate and the same? The same thing with the same basic question is asked of an awakened human being. Does a Tathagata, an awakened human being, exist after death? Does a Tathagata not exist after death? Does a Tathagata both not exist and exist after death? And these are these questions asked to create a conundrum in our own minds that just keep us constantly distracted. And they're very useful for that way. And interesting, I mentioned this last night, most religions try to prove or try to at least establish themselves as a true religion by providing answers to these questions that are just pure speculation. So I'll start this sutta. I'll start reading from the sutta towards the end, but the closing sequence where the Buddha has gone through a list of things that are irrelevant, and these are just related to all these questions that Vajra was always asking the Buddha. They're just simply irrelevant. They don't apply to the Dhamma. And it's not to imply that they're not important, but they're also not unimportant. They're questions that shouldn't even be arising within the conversation of the Dhamma, except to point out that they are irrelevant, as the Buddha does. So the Buddha gets to the point now where he's individually responded to these specific questions, saying that they're all irrelevant. Now, Vajra wants to know, he's still hung up on what happens to an awakened human being after they die. And again, all of these questions that hope to establish a self or a soul in a non-physical or extra-physical realm is simply an attempt of continued eye-making, in a way of conceptually establishing a self in a realm that is purely conceptual, meaning a non-physical realm. But the physical mind insists on doing that. And in this case, this has been distracting Vajragota all these years. In other words, he won't take up a true Dhamma practice until in his mind he can find some answers. And he's in a very subtle way tricked himself into saying, I'm not going to follow someone until they can provide these answers to me first. And the Buddha understands that, and he repeatedly says to Vajra and other people who are hung up with these questions, that it is the questions that are disturbing you and confusing you. Let go of the questions. And that's really what he says here. So now we're down to the kind of the catch-all philosophy that religion and spirituality has used since probably the beginning of time to reconcile everything into this this soup of continual misery, meaning that the soul and the body are somehow enmeshed in this world that is prone to confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering, and there's really no way out save for wandering from one life to the next, hoping to improve your lot in each successive future life by doing good deeds now. And again, that's a simplification of many religions. It's Buddhism is often portrayed that way, that it's a religion of constantly gaining merit to improve your lot usually in a future life, not even in this life. And also it's portrayed that it takes endless eons to complete this process of continually improving yourself. The Buddha recognized that as pure nonsense. It has nothing to do with that. What is most important is what's occurring in our mind as our life unfolds. And to recognize and abandon all of the ignorance that has taken root in a mind that has no knowledge of Four Noble Truths. So, Bhatia asked, but Master Gotama, the one whose mind is thus released, meaning they're awakened, where are they reborn? Bhatia, rebirth is irrelevant. Master Gotama, are you saying this one is not reborn? Bhatia not being reborn is irrelevant. So the question has nothing to do with birth or rebirth, whether it's valid or not. They're completely irrelevant questions. Because what's most important is what's occurring in our minds right now, and how am I responding to my life as my life unfolds from the point of view of right view or wrong view. And it's a wrong view to be concerned about a future birth or to decide that there is no such thing as being reborn. The Buddha continues, whether one is reborn or not reborn, or whether one may be reborn and not be reborn, are all irrelevant, meaning to be reborn and not be reborn concurrently, which is something that one of the great Mahayana teachers, Nagarjuna, was a big proponent of the irreconcilable modern dharmas, meaning that it's not this, it's both not this and this, whatever it is, whatever the phenomenon is, concurrently at the same time. And of course, that you have to make that claim if you're going to reconcile anything into a permanent fixed system, which is what that attempt is to do. And usually a permanent fixed system needs someone to run the system. And that system is usually a god or a whole collection of gods that are controlling all this. The Buddha, again, realized the nonsense of that belief as far as it relates to human life. What is most important is to recognize the conditions that give rise to confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering. And those conditions are rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Bhatia says, at this point, Master Gotama, I am even more confused. The Buddha responds, of course you're confused, Bhatia, of course you're confused. The phenomena of ignorance of Four Noble Truths, providing sustenance to confused and deluded views, is hard to see and very hard to realize. This understanding, meaning fully awakened right view, is tranquil and refined. This understanding is beyond conjecture, and which also means it's beyond any type of conceptualization. This understanding is subtle. This understanding is experienced by the wise. It's another important line. It means that we actually have the experience of understanding. It's not something that we create an objectified view of and then establish ourselves in that view. That's just another concept. We actually have the experience of understanding the nature of human life and the arising and passing away of thoughts, words, and ideas. The Buddha continues, for those with other views or other practices who have other goals or other teachers, it is not possible to know. So a very important declarative statement. If you're following something that has a different goal or teachers that teach something differently, you obviously are going to learn something differently and the result is going to be completely different than what you might learn from someone else who teaching something different. And so just because something has a label of Buddhism doesn't necessarily, in fact, it's more than likely a teaching that did not originate in the Buddha. It may have been influenced by a misguided historical understanding of a Buddha and what he might have taught. But when you do a careful study of the Sutta Pitaka, the second book in the Pali Canon, you realize very quickly what the Buddha taught and what he didn't, because a consistency of the relationship to dependent origination, as the Buddha taught that in the Four Noble Truths, is throughout the Pali Canon. For those with other views or other practices who have other goals or other teachers, it is not possible to know. That being the case, I will now put some questions to you. Answer as you see fit, Vacha. If a fire is burning in front of you, would you know that the fire is burning? Vacha answers, yes, wise teacher. And Vacha, what is sustaining the fire? The fire is dependent on grass and timber for its sustenance. Vacha, if the fire were to go out, would you know that the fire has gone out? Vacha answers, yes, wise teacher. And in which direction from here has the fire gone? Has it gone east or west or north or south? Vacha answers, Master Gotama, that question is irrelevant. The Buddha, of course, knows that it's irrelevant, but he's making the point. He's taking the structure of Vacha's confused mind and turning it back towards, in a way that Vacha can see that. Master Gotama, the question is irrelevant. What has sustained the fire, grass and timber, has been consumed. Any fire burning dependent on a sustenance of grass and timber will simply cease to exist. The fire is unbound or released from its sustenance. The Buddha says, Vacha, just as a fire is extinguished from receiving sustenance, becoming empty of ignorance removes sustenance from greed, aversion, and ongoing unsatisfactory experiences. It removes the condition that is giving rise to dukkha. Any physical form describing the Tathagata as a form is a wrong view, meaning a fixed physical form that would migrate from one life to the next, or a mind that holds that belief, so then wants an explanation of an assurance that it does happen, and then how it happens. How can that process actually take place? Because again, Vacha in his mind, as in all minds that are confused, his biggest concern is how do I maintain a constant view of myself in all these different realms that I'm being exposed to? So in when you look at it that way, it would have been an easier development. It would have been easier for Vacha to develop the Dhamma if he didn't have these confused views about establishing himself in other realms that he's heard other teachers talk about. So again, it just happens. It's not right or wrong. It's what occurs. But it's unfortunate that it occurs, that there's so much false dharma out there, but again, that's always the case. So Vacha is now coming to understand that even though what he's heard and has been portrayed as reasonable pursuits or things that are reasonable to consider as a spiritual practice, I'm using that term loosely, is almost necessary. Rather than what the Buddha is teaching, is all those thoughts and those motivations and the intentions to let your mind go in that direction is all rooted in ignorance, and so it results in a completely irrelevant search, including now creating concepts of an awakened human being with the limits that are an aspect of our own minds, but not a limit that truly exists in the world. The Tathagata has meaning, a limit to how much we can understand and can we actually awaken. The Tathagata has abandoned all wrong views. He has awakened. The root of dukkha has been destroyed and the conditions of ignorance and suffering abandoned. Confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing disappointment will not arise in me in the future. And the Buddha now is not talking about, he's talking both about a future life, but what's most important is it will not arrive in the future, in the next future moment. Vacha, freed from the association with form, the Tathagata remains deep, boundless, difficult to understand. In order to understand the Tathagata, meaning to understand awakening, one must abandon all wrong views. Again, a very important declarative statement. Wrong views and right views can exist concurrently, but the compulsion to try to reconcile that is reflected in this idea of everything being reconciled in some kind of amorphous soup where things exist and both don't exist at the same time. The great teacher Nagarjuna who espoused that. But that's really the reconciliation that belief systems that are lacking an understanding of Four Noble Truths has to eventually go there. If you have the mind that is inclined to seek a foundation for its belief, and not everybody needs to do that. Most people will just accept a common belief because it's common, but some people's minds want to go a little bit deeper and establish a ground of being, which is often used in modern Buddhism, or a foundation for this belief. And that ground of being, or that the explanation, and Christians would might call this the Holy Spirit, have to establish a realm or an environment or a power that can hold all of these different ideas in a conceptual form. And ultimately that conceptual form has to be, if you go down this thinking, this deluded thinking to a certain, to its conclusion, that conclusion has to be, well, then everything has to both exist and not exist at the same time. It's the only way to reconcile these views. And of course, the Buddha is saying that's just nonsense. A clear understanding of what the Buddha taught is that everything, the entire universe, is always in a process of becoming, meaning it's everything is impermanent and everything is always changing. That doesn't necessarily mean that the process is always moving towards what we might call a positive change. Again, that denies the first noble truth that dukkha occurs. But what we can develop an understanding of is that we can maintain a pure, calm, and peaceful mind, a mind resting in equanimity, no matter what's occurring in this environment that is prone to an ever-changing, it's chaotic existence. We can maintain what the Buddha described as an awakened mind, is calm and peaceful. Vata, freed from the association with form, the Tathagata remains deep, boundless, difficult to understand. In order to understand the Tathagata, one must abandon wrong views. I know I'm just reading that twice to lead into this. And so this, the Buddha places the importance of wrong views, and there's many ways that he describes wrong views, but in this instance, he's placing a very narrow but necessary focus on the ultimate problem where all of these wrong views are reconciled. Rebirth is irrelevant, no rebirth is irrelevant. Rebirth and no rebirth concurrently is irrelevant. Again, when you look at the history of Vata, and I don't know if I gave it at the beginning of this talk, but Vata was it came in and out of the Buddha's life over a long period of time. It's unclear how many years it might have been. But in this sutta, he finally gets it. And the Buddha has realized that Vata has developed enough understanding to make this fine point that all of your wrong views that you've been carrying around, leading to these foolish questions that continually distract you, are rooted in this usage of the term rebirth or reincarnation as a reconciliation point for all wrong views. And that's what he's saying here. Rebirth is irrelevant. No rebirth is irrelevant, and creating that reconciliation of rebirth and no rebirth is occurring concurrently is also irrelevant. Furthermore, Vata, any feeling, any perception, any fabrication, any consciousness by which one associates with a Tathagata would now understand that Tathagata has abandoned ignorance. Its root has been destroyed. And that last, the Buddha referring to feeling, perceptions, fabrications, or consciousness, and previous to that, the form, is referring to the five clinging aggregates, which is simply the Buddha's term and collection of words in a certain way that describe the ongoing personal experience of suffering. It's another euphemism for anatta. It's even, it has a very clear association with karma, because karma is the personal experience of suffering, used in a different way to describe the ever-changing and changeable nature of suffering. Nothing, it means that nothing is written in stone, including what the Buddha is talking about here. The conditions rooted in ignorance that would give rise to suffering are simply no longer present. So the Buddha has emptied himself of ignorance. That's the true meaning of emptiness as far as the Buddha teaches. The most important thing is to not have a shred of ignorance left. And that is a completely achievable task when the only path the Buddha ever taught, the Eightfold Path, is followed. freed from, the Buddha continues, freed from association with ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance, this wise one is indeed deep, boundless, and hard to understand. Meaning you can't conceptualize something that is deep and hard to understand. The only way to understand it is to have the experience of it. The wanderer, Vajragota, finally understands and expresses his profound delight, Master Gotama, due to impermanence of great solitude. Now he's just explaining in metaphorical ways that he understands what the Buddha's talking about. A great solitude loses its branches, its leaves, its bark, its sapwood, leaving only pure heartwood. The Buddha's Dhamma is often portrayed as a pure heartwood, meaning all of the dross the unnecessary material has been stripped away or laid bare due to the Buddha's awakening, and what is presented is only the heartwood. And of course, that's what the Buddha taught throughout his 45-year teaching career, was just pure heartwood. And what has changed, and the process began almost immediately upon his death. David brought that point up last night, and we talked a little bit about it. If you want to understand that process, there's an article on the website and in the books about the Pali Canon. But there was always this compulsion to adapt, accommodate, and embellish what the Buddha actually taught and make it fit the current views, even though we know that these wrong views are causing confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering. We still want to fit the Dhamma. And that's really what has held back Vajra and all of us from completely and wholeheartedly engaging with the Dhamma, is that skepticism and doubt and indifference that we use to hold on to wrong views. And so we start taking those views and attaching them to the Dhamma and finding ways that the Dhamma doesn't work, rather than what the Buddha says the only way to know this is to experience. That's what he's saying right here. Master Gotama, your words are free of branches, leaves, bark, and sapwood. Your words stand as pure heartwood. Your teaching is magnificent. Your teaching is clear, direct, and distortion-free. You have revealed what seemed hidden. You have shown me the way. You carry a lamp into the darkness so that those with eyes to see can see the five clinging aggregates as you see them, even through these many lines of confused views. And then goes for refuge. With a declarative statement, I go to Master Gotama for refuge to his Dhamma and to our Sangha. May Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge. And that's the end of the sutta. And so the understanding that the Buddha is hoping to portray here, and he does it very well, is to show that the workings of a conditioned mind are always conspiring, coming up with a systematic way to continue to ignore our own ignorance. And so we create these concepts, whether they're so-called great questions. I don't see them as great questions. They're just common questions that people have been asking, such as the universe being infinite, etc., the rebirth, or simply a worry about what's going to happen to me tomorrow or what's going to happen to me in the next minute. That constant anxiety is rooted in the same ignorance that has Vajra so confused all these years. How can I comfortably establish myself in my imagination, whether it's an imaginary realm or an imaginary experience that I'm projecting myself to in the next moment or the next day or the next week? It's all, how can I maintain this view that I'm having of myself in relation to the world that I'm living in? And when there's a lack of understanding that initial view is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, we'll create infinite and very powerful and very subtle strategies to continue to ignore our own ignorance, including insisting in our minds that I must have an answer to these questions, or even to say that that a teaching of a Buddha can't be completely useful unless I get an answer to these questions. That's what religions are for, and it's not what the Buddha was about. So I hope you found this talk helpful today. I'll give another talk next Wednesday. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becomingvastbuddha.com. And thank you for joining me today. Peace.